Thank you, Peter. A large portfolio of children too, which is my proudest achievement with my wife, Deborah. Distinguished guests, councillors, Ian Armstrong, a colleague of mine from the New South Wales Parliament, which is going to be a lot sadder and poorer as Ian retires next year. It's good to be here. I've been Minister of Police since October. It seems such a long time. And normally you'd try to start a presentation like this with some frivolity or joke. I must admit I don't feel much like it today, and I had a fairly brutal press conference upstairs, but that's okay. But it is a pleasure to join you here today at this lunch, New South Wales Transport Infrastructure Addressing the Challenges. Before moving on to that discussion, however, I want to address the issue of the rail rolling stock PPP, because I know some of you here today have an interest in the matter, and I just wanted to clear that issue up before moving on. You know those that are interested because they take a pen out and start writing things down. The government has not made a decision on the PPP. A cabinet has not considered it, and I will not be making an announcement today. So there's some news. I'm not making an announcement. There will be a decision in the near future, but that's all I propose to say about that, and I think you'll understand. Today I want to talk about transport in Sydney in a national context. Transport, particularly public transport, is a national priority. Now, urban congestion is a significant problem we face in New South Wales and Sydney. Unlike our regional neighbours or European cities, we have never really lived in a high-density city. Parts of it are, but overwhelmingly it's not. And I believe many communities don't want to live in a densely settled Sydney. Now, that, of course, raises substantial challenges for the creation of sustainable transport infrastructure. Now, it's fine for people to compare us to Singapore or to London, but we're not like those cities, and there's often no recognition of the different densities of those cities to ours. One solution to the challenge has to be the dispersion of jobs and growth to growth centres from the inner city to around the City of Sydney. And that was the basis of the government's City of Cities approach with the Metro strategy and the state plan that will come out to support that. Now, that's a planning approach to our difficulties, but there are transport policy and infrastructure changes that are also being undertaken. Perhaps the most significant for most of Sydney's residents are in fact those that arise out of the bus reform agenda, basically the private bus reform agenda. Now, that's a policy development that may not be as exciting or as high-powered as a major rail expansion project, but it's actually got more to do with more people living in Sydney, because for much of metropolitan Sydney, especially the west, northwest and southwest, it's buses and private buses that provide most transport options. The bus reform agenda has brought sustainable contracts and stability to an industry that really was in crisis, much is overused word, but this industry was. It had experienced an 18% drop since 1990. Any business that has an 18% drop in its patronage over such a short period of time, I'm now going to drink water and speak at the same time. One of my party tricks? No. But any industry that has such a drop in patronage over such a short period of time really is in crisis. Now, those contracts are now signed. We're now moving on with service reviews, and there is stability in that industry, and it is very attractive to several overseas players, as it should be. We've also instituted a network of strategic bus corridors to provide direct, reliable services between those hubs. Hurstville, Liverpool, Parramatta, Penrith and Chatswood. There's thousands of people every day that come nowhere near the CBD. Not just any day, any week. I was surprised when I was Minister for Education. There's a lot of kids living west of Parramatta that to come into Sydney is like a yearly or longer experience for them. A lot of people just never come east of Parramatta. They live their life there, and we can never forget that, and hopefully you don't either, those involved in business. But laying out the blueprint for growth and showing clearly where our transport corridors will be, I hope allows business to invest in those growth centres with certainty that their employees, their customers and suppliers can access their businesses. So dispersion should delay some of the pressures on the bottlenecks which have emerged around the Sydney CBD, and we know them, the major entry points to the city, the Harbour Crossing, Victoria Road. Work is planned to make some of those corridors and pinch points work more effectively, but that's for the future. But people still need to travel across Sydney and into the CBD, and for that we need improved transport infrastructure. Recognising that, we released the 10-year state infrastructure strategy that maps the infrastructure across the state over the next 10 years. $10 billion in the 06-07 year, $110 billion on infrastructure over the next decade. It's a massive setting aside of funds for infrastructure, but it needs to be. Some we were just talking about, a lot of the infrastructure we depend on is reaching the end of its life, and we need this huge investment to move on to the next stage. Now, an integrated nature of the strategy will be to allow the private sector, public sector agencies, local councils and the wider community to have an input into the decisions about priorities and timing. And that was partly the state plan agenda, and more will be heard of that shortly. There's also been, over recent years, an historic refocusing of budget priorities towards public transport here in the state. We're spending as much as we responsibly can to meet the needs of our economic growth. But the state does have a limited tax base and increasingly reliant on the GST and tied federal grants. Now, you're all aware of that, or you should be. The shrinking tax base facing the government, and at the same time the rapidly increased call on the state government for its basic services, in particular health and aged care. But it's health that's the real killer. It takes up about 25% of our state budget, and it's gobbling up 8 to 10% a year increase, and with no signs of that slowing, because we're getting older, folks, and we want to live longer, and that just hits our budget bottom line. Now, we need to take action to reform that, and we are on the state budget, but we also do need a much better state-federal relationship about these things. Some reform of the Grants Commission behaviour and the share of the GST coming to New South Wales is a priority. I can go through those numbers, but I think you've heard most of them. We do have to get a fairer share of our GST funds back here. If we did that, we'd be able to spend more on infrastructure. And if you can have some influence over that, I'd encourage you to do so. You'll get a different story from the Deputy Premier in Queensland, though, I suppose, and some other places. How fast we deliver the necessary transport investment really depends in part on the federal government's willingness to allow a fairer share of tax returns to New South Wales. The other thing that we've been making pretty clear over recent times is asking the federal government to get directly involved in public transport projects in our capital cities. It happens in other federal systems overseas, where the federal government gets involved in the provision of public transport in our cities. The trigger for it, and why the federal government should listen to the appeal, is that urban congestion has become a challenge of national importance. The federal government quite appropriately got involved in freight strategy and infrastructure because of the impact and the importance to the national economy. Absolutely support that. Now, I'd argue that congestion issues and the positive economic impact of improved public transport in our major capital cities warrants federal government involvement because economic productivity is impacted on by the ease with which our citizens move in and around our major cities. It applies in Melbourne, Brisbane, but in particular in Sydney. If it's going to take you 40 minutes, an hour in peak hour to get in from Macquarie Park to the CBD, that makes people make certain decisions. We need to free up as much as we can our economy, and if by better public transport or road provision we can do that, well, I think that's absolutely legitimate to call on the federal government to assist in that. New South Wales and Victoria have begun to put the case to Canberra that AusLink, for example, should be refocused to do more than just build roads. It should deal with issues of urban congestion. Now, the advent of the Australian Rail Track Corporation, ARTC, now responsible for interstate rail freight, has delivered some benefits, and we absolutely support that here in New South Wales. However, in the absence of substantial federal investment in passenger rail, the state's rail system is under increasing pressures. Now, we've invested $1.5 billion on the Clearways projects. Many of you are familiar with that. And if you've caught the Eastern Suburbs line, you've seen the biggest and most expensive, you wouldn't have seen it, but you've enjoyed it, the Bondi Junction Turnback, which has increased our capacity on that line quite markedly. The McDonaldtown Stabling and the Barara work on the platform are those that have been delivered, with many more to come. It's a major commitment of funds to increase the productivity of our rail network. But to provide a lasting solution for urban congestion really requires several billion dollars more being spent on public transport. Significant money has already been committed to achieve partial separation of passenger and freight rail, and we've contributed considerable funds with the ARTC to the construction of a dedicated freight line in southern Sydney. The southern Sydney freight line will improve freight reliability between Melbourne, Sydney, and Brisbane, and the other benefit is that it will free up enough capacity to allow the equivalent of an additional 36 commuter trains per day on our system, because of that interface between freight and passenger, which is essential in an economy like ours. We have to allow the freight trains to keep running through and into Sydney, but we can work it out better, I think. I made the case at a recent transport summit that the key to our urban amenity and efficient growth is more efficient use of mass transit for both freight and passengers. Now, the big rail project that's coming is the Metropolitan Rail Expansion Project or program, with new lines to southwestern Sydney, Leppington, Glenfield to Leppington, northwestern Sydney from Epping out to Rouse Hill, and a new crossing of the Sydney Harbour, under the harbour, new rail stations in the CBD, and duplication of lines in other places. Now, planning and land acquisition for that project is well underway. It'll cost $10 billion minimum, and it will be the biggest expansion of our rail system in Sydney for 90 years. Really goes back to our forefathers who built the system. It's a major project. And there will be substantial private sector involvement in that project. We haven't yet got to the point of mapping that out, but the government welcomes very strongly private sector involvement in that, and I'm happy to take your suggestions over that. I think if the Commonwealth is to manage its responsibilities for the national supply chain efficiency and for continued economic growth, they should be ready to be involved in projects like that. I'm not saying that one, because we'll work that through, but there are other rail projects to set Sydney up for the next 50 years that we must be looking at now. Sydney is by far the most significant marketplace in the country. And it's important to remind everyone that we actually get more people onto public transport every day here than any other city in Australia, and it's comparable with some world cities. We carry over 70% of trips to and from the CBD by public transport every day, but that still needs to increase. I can report that our peak hour commuter loads are growing. Over the past 12 months, there's an extra 118,000 people using our rail system every week, and there are more people coming back to buses. That was partly about the new timetable, which improved on-time running, now in the low 90%, but it's also about improved safety and comfort, and that's going to improve with new rail carriages coming, with the outer suburban cars and others that will come into our network. It's also about very much, it's a service, so if it's clean and people feel safe and it's reliable, they'll come back to it. And we're doing a bit in all of those areas with cleanliness and transit officers, which is reducing the crime rate on our network, but still there's a way to go with that. I think our women customers in particular, security on the rail network is an issue in their minds, and we have to never forget that and give attention to it, of all our customers, but in particular women at night. This year, there has been quite a shift in funding towards public transport. You need to know that more money is being spent this year on public transport than on roads, and it's the first time that's happened for many years, and it will continue to happen for a number of years into the future. As the states grapple with the increasing burdens of an ageing population that place those burdens on healthcare, our budgets will be strained in dealing with other services such as transport. We need, I think, to recast, therefore, our partnership with the Commonwealth to shift from a focus on which roads belong to whom, from which roads belong to whom, to a focus on shared responsibility for integrated planning and investment. I just want to briefly touch on light rail and insult someone sitting at my table who's interested in light rail for Sydney. I hope it's not particularly insulting, but in some quarters, light rail is promoted as being the cure-all of all of Sydney's CBD's transport issues. It seems to be from some people that if we were to install light rail in the CBD, traffic congestion would evaporate, customers would be happy, Sydney would become an urban village once again, and everyone would be happy. The light rail versus bus debate, and that's what it has been, simply does not address the core issue facing public transport in Sydney. How do we get more people out of their cars and onto public transport? The public debate we should be having is not about buses versus light rail, it's about public transport versus private motor vehicle. The advocates of light rail propose to swap part of the existing bus network, just part of it, for light rail at vastly increased cost. Such a move does nothing to actually increase the numbers of people using public transport. Rather, the proposal is to provide a different mode of travel for people who are already public transport users. And the current proposal to bring people by bus into, say, Central, and then get them to move from one form of public transport onto another, every study that I've shown, that's been shown to me, says that people won't do that. They'll do something else. Now, I actually don't think that that's progress. It's a fashion. It's actually going backwards because forcing such a change would encourage people away from public transport. The light rail proposal, I believe, is inherently problematic for a CBD like ours. This is not Melbourne. And I don't care what... There's Elizabeth Farrelly that writes in the Sydney Morning Herald now. This is not Melbourne and never will be Melbourne. And thank God it's not Melbourne, you know. It's a Sydney, rugby league and all of that. I like Melbourne to visit. I wouldn't want to live there. If we went ahead with light rail through the CBD, it would require strict quarantining of CBD streets from general traffic. That's if we wanted to move the number of people that we have to move over the next 10 years. To suggest you can have light rail and cars and buses in the same street is nonsensical. You could do it, but nothing would move. And in Melbourne, they're complaining about congestion issues with trams now, and they've slowed down. Quarantining two of our major streets, George and Castlereagh, which in effect you'd have to do to make it work efficiently, would simply cause traffic chaos at each of the east-west crossings of the CBD. Now, we know a bit about traffic chaos east-west, and we're not going to go there. You can't put in a public transport system that in fact makes transport more difficult, more problematic. I hope he's not a light rail advocate. Sorry. The other thing that's come to me is that it would take a percentage of buses off our streets, maybe 20%, but it wouldn't take off those coming from the northern side, a huge bulk of those. It would take a percentage of buses off. You'd still have to have buses on the streets of Sydney. The reality is that our future as a workable city depends on the expansion of our heavy rail system under the streets of Sydney and buses. Now, that's basically what exists in London and Manhattan, and it's what our future is here. In conclusion, I'd like to just touch on the issue of partnership between government and the private sector. Over the past 20 years, successive governments have turned to the private sector to maximise the benefits that we can to the people of this state. Now, since launching the Working with Government policy in 2001, we have extended the reach of PPPs to schools, hospitals, justice, rail rolling stock and social housing. The timely delivery of these projects is made possible by private sector assistance. And it's brought forward, and we should never forget this. Sometimes the Greens in particular throw this up, and it's one of the arguments we need to actually express far better. PPPs have actually brought forward infrastructure development by years, in some cases decades, where we would have to have waited. I know this. I was Minister for Education when we signed up the PPP there. It meant brand new schools for generations of kids that otherwise they would have had to have waited 10 years or longer. In fact, those kids would have finished their school without having been into mountables. Now, that's a social benefit to our community that comes from the PPP. We want to willingly embrace the private sector as partners in the development of this state. I was at a function last night, one of the proponents of PPPs. We have to have a relationship built on trust and cooperation, and that's certainly the position that the New South Wales government takes, a partnership built on trust and mutual understanding. If we do that, we can achieve much for the people of this state. This electorate is very demanding. They want from the state government, they want the services delivered. They want to know that their school at the end of the street is going to teach their kid well, that if their mum gets sick, there'll be a bed at the local hospital, that if there's a problem in their street, the coppers will come. And if they go to work, they can get there and back again on time. It's pretty basic, but it's overwhelmingly difficult to deliver day in, day out. State government's actually very hard to do because people's expectations are so high. And so they should be. If you live in Australia and you live in Sydney, you've got a right to expect the highest levels of service from governments. We can't do it by ourselves. It can only be done in partnership with the private sector in a modern, maturing relationship, especially over PPPs. I hope that's the message that you are hearing from the New South Wales government, and it's certainly the message that I'm very keen to bring to you today. Thank you for your attention.